Morning. Hello, excellent. Everyone's awake. I'm guessing it was a late night last night. How many people went to the 1E party? Yeah, the people who aren't here, obviously, they stayed out a little bit later. So good morning. My name's Matt McSpirit. I'm a senior product marketing manager in the server and cloud team based in Redmond, but as you can probably tell, not originally from Redmond, just recently moved over to the US. And it's my pleasure to talk you through what we're doing around System Center and Hyper-V and how we're positioning ourselves competitively against a certain competitor in the market. It begins with V and ends in Mware. And that's where we're going to spend our time focusing on today. And to focus the discussion, because we could go 101 different ways. We could go feature by feature, tick box, or we could go very broad and high level. And I've tried to pitch it somewhere in the middle around a topic that's, I suppose, relevant, it's common, it's been discussed a lot at MMS, and now there's the private cloud. And we're going to drill into these four pillars and how they compare and contrast and what we offer and why Microsoft offers the best solution using Windows Server, using System Center within those four key areas. So we'll go through those step by step, and we'll there'll be time for questions at the end, and we'll be able to have hopefully a nice discussion and some demos as well of our strengths. So, if we start off with this private cloud, and it's important just to lay the groundwork in terms of what private cloud is all about, what it means to Microsoft from an attributes perspective. I went too far away from the clicker there. And in terms of how we define the private cloud and how we group it, just from an attributes perspective, it's all about pooling, it's all about abstraction, grouping of resources, CPU, memory, all that kind of stuff, grouping it in such a way that we don't need to know about it all when we're coming to deploy services. We just need to know the capacity's there, it can scale on demand, it's elastic, and we can access it in such a way that isn't detrimental to IT, so not giving everybody every right under the sun to do what they want, but it's flexible enough to let the users achieve what they want to achieve through that self-service. And it's also about tracking and metering resource usage. So if you want to charge back, if you want to provide that billing into an internal customer, an external customer, if you're a service provider, you could do that. But private cloud, they're cloud attributes in general. Where private cloud sort of specializes that is it starts to introduce control and customization. And with System Center 2012, that control, that granularity you can deliver in terms of controlling IT services, applications, virtual machines, physical machines, it's an incredible level of integrated control that can be customized and tailored to your specific environments, which is slightly different to a public cloud service that you would consume and have no control over, really. So something like Office 365 is a good example. You're not rebooting Office 365 servers. You're not managing them in that way. You're just consuming the services from that particular public cloud services. So in this case, private cloud, it's dedicated to what you want to do on your terms. And when it comes to technologies, we often get caught up in those attributes, and I like to rein it back in and focus just on what's driving the private cloud. Because if you're a technical person, which I'm assuming the majority of us are in the room, you're going to be focusing on, you know, what products do I need to license? What do I need to implement to build this kind of thing? And from a Microsoft standpoint, it's fairly straightforward. It's Windows Server today with Hyper-V, 2008 R2. And now, seeing as we've launched, I can say today, System Center 2012. But on the VMware side, it's a slightly bigger set of technologies that if you want to achieve what you can achieve with the Microsoft stack there, you need to start adding on quite a few different technologies. Obviously, there's vSphere and vCenter hand in hand, very mature, you know, been around for a while, and I'm sure many of you have got them in your infrastructures. But then we're starting to introduce technologies that have been embedded into vCenter, so vCenter Orchestrator for automation. You've got additional technologies like vCloud Director, and then you've got some of the acquired technologies that are starting to come together in the portfolio. So technologies acquired from the likes of Integrion and some of the stuff that came through the Ionix from EMC, they're starting to be gelled together to compete effectively with System Center. Well, System Center's been in the game a long time. Many of you will have worked with tools like Configuration Manager and tools like Operations Manager through a number of years, a number of iterations. And these tools in the most recent release, they've not just stood on their morals and just kind of carried on the way they've worked over the last 10 years or so. They've really been tuned and cloud optimized in how they work together and what they can deliver from a scenario perspective. But we're seeing VMware move even further past just infrastructure management and virtualization management and into application management. Some of the stuff they acquired from Hyperic and tied in with the SpringSource links they've got now, and the way they monitor those applications and provision those applications, again, need separate technologies to deliver that. All of these kind of tools are within System Center 2012. So from a licensing standpoint, from an integration, and from a delivery standpoint, it's a very streamlined way of delivering on the Microsoft side. But you've got a number of tools on the VMware side. But you know, that's just how it is today. I'm sure that will evolve going forward. So when we focus in the comparison, as I said, I'm going to focus on these four key pillars. So applications, and you've seen a lot of this at MMS this year. I'm sure you have. You've seen sessions on delivering services and apps and not worrying too much about the fabric. But we are going to talk about the fabric. We're going to talk about heterogeneous environments because they're becoming more and more commonplace. We're seeing big VMware shops introduce Hyper-V and also Zen Server and potentially other platforms as well. We're seeing people running mixed workloads, not just Windows, but Linux, and they're running different application stacks on top of that as well. So we're going to look at some of those and how System Center offers the best value for that heterogeneous environment. And we'll look at Hyper-V as a foundation of the private cloud, and we'll talk about, finally, how you can consume the cloud that's right for your environment. It's not just the Microsoft cloud, it's not just a VMware cloud, it's a mix, and it's about the cloud that's right for your business. And through System Center and Hyper-V and a number of other key technologies around the ecosystem from hardware and storage vendor partners, we can deliver really the solution that's right for you. So, when we focus on the app, when I put these slides together, these transitions didn't feel that long, but they are actually the slowest transitions in the world. Here we go, and it's gone. So, application focus. There's three key elements to this. Constructing and delivering the app, maintaining that application and the fabric, and protecting it. So once it's deployed and delivered, how do we keep it safe and secure? How do we ensure that it's up, and if there's a failure, how can we restore it in that event? So we're going to go through those three key elements. Now, one of the things that often gets overlooked with the Microsoft Private Cloud, and specifically VMM as a product, there's lots of cool features. People are talking about Server App V, and they're talking about other cool things around how it manages different platforms, different hypervisors, and so on. But there's certain things within VMM that really streamline the way you can deliver applications now. Now, I'm sure most of you in the room are familiar with virtual machine templates, whether that's on VMware, whether that's on Hyper-V or whatever, or Virtual Machine Manager specifically. But in 2012, we've taken that granularity of a virtual machine template up considerably. So it's really streamlining the speed at which you can deliver an application, a workload, a virtual instance, whatever it may be. So this is before we even get into delivering services. This is just delivering pure virtual machines, just simplistic virtual machines. But the granularity we can go to now is much more optimized for speed and agility. So if I pop over to my demonstration environment, just to give you an example and put a bit of context around what I'm talking about. My demo machine, just to give you an idea of, we're demoing at long range here. So this is us, and this is my lab in Edinburgh in the UK. So I should have got something a little bit closer, but never mind. And if you're on the wireless and the wired network, if you could stop your downloads just for a few minutes so I can show something. So here we go. So I'm in one of the VMs that's running. This is Virtual Machine Manager 2012. You've seen it in the keynote. You've seen it at multiple points this week, I'm sure. What I find really useful and what a lot of people overlook is just the simplicity of and the granularity now of our templates. So if we look at this particular VM template, we look at, yes, we've got the hardware config. That's pretty standard. But when you start to look at how we can tailor the OS by adding things like roles and features, so that when we're deploying these OSs, these virtual machines, They're already hitting the ground, pre-configured. And the beauty of these templates within the virtual machine manager environment is I can maintain a single gold VHD, virtual hard disk, and going forward, VHDX file, and I can layer all of these templates to point at the single VHD. So I could have 100 different templates, each with different customizations from roles and features perspective, but they're only consuming enough space of one VHD. It's slightly different in the VMware world. But in Microsoft world, it's that optimized storage consumption, just a single VHD attached to multiple templates. And that's because we layer things. So we layer an OS profile, an application profile, a SQL profile. So when it all comes together as a single template, we can easily switch out the layers as we see fit. So if you look at this data tier template, it's using exactly the same VHD, the virtual hard disk, which is a Windows Server 2008 R2 Service Pack 1 template, VHD file, round about 10 gig in size in this case. But it's the same one that's being used in the web tier template. However, when we look at the OS config, when it comes to roles, I've not enabled any roles, but I've turned on features like .NET. So little things like that can speed up that provisioning. And you could say, well, yeah, I could do that in scripts today. I've got a complete unattended infrastructure where I can deploy that kind of stuff, no problem. And that's fine. If you want to use unattended files, bring them in, if that's your way of doing it. But we give you the choice. And when it comes to deploying these templates, the little view script button that's grayed out because I'm not actually going through a process here, if this was deploying from a template, I could click that view script button and it would give me all the PowerShell that's going to go under the covers to do that. So I can start to use that to optimize still further. So I'm going to come out of there. So that was just a little bit of where I see it. It's such a simple thing, but it just gets overlooked. You know, it's very, very useful to know. And it can really speed up the way you deliver virtual machines in this instance. But it's not just about the VMs. As I said, it's about layering on those roles, those features, setting yourself up to deliver an application. And that's where we come on to what I call VM templates 2.0. You know, the next level of virtual machine templates. The ability to deliver multi-tiered services that you can quickly deploy, quickly upgrade and manage, but it still maintains that layered approach. So we can swap things out as necessary. We can introduce things like server application virtualization. We can introduce SQL DAC and MS deploy packages to quickly deploy services and applications into our environments. It could be something very complex, like a multi-tiered database, web-based application. But it could be something as simple as a client-server application that your development team want to work on. And that combination, that ability through the service templates to create those very easily and deliver them either through VMM to Hyper-V hosts, to vSphere hosts, to Zen Server hosts, or into clouds, because that's a nice differentiation. You know, you don't have to be using private cloud-like technologies. You don't have to have defined any clouds within VMM to deploy service templates. You can just deploy them to normal hosts, as you've probably been doing over the past few years. So we give you that flexibility to make that decision. As I said, you can deploy into clouds, and we saw this Vijay spin up a cloud in the keynote the other day. Really easy to do, and then through either VMM's console or app controller, I can then deliver out to my users the ability to provision their services, their templates, their standard virtual machines, whatever they may be. And all of that is role-based. So if I log in as an admin, I see everything. I can use VMM's console. I can use everything in App Controller. I don't have the same boundaries that others may have. But with, if I'm a lesser user, if I'm logging in as an application owner, I don't need to see all of the nuts and bolts and the building blocks that make up the private cloud. I just need to see that I've got capacity and I need to be able to consume my services and deliver them as necessary. And it's about that control. It's not about giving everything to the end user, to the application owner, to the business unit owner. It's about giving them that boundary that you know you can support, and if they need to scale, giving them a mechanism to request that scale going up and down as necessary, and charging them if you see fit. But what about VMware? I'm not quite sure why that's been capitalized, but there you go. How does that compare and contrast? Well, VM templates, as I said before, are tied to VMDKs. So you end up consuming quite a lot of storage the more templates you have. And when it comes to deploying from a template, you can do some OS customization, but nothing to the same level as the roles and the features, and you're relying on scripts. Yeah, you can join it to the domain, and you can change the name and that kind of stuff, and sysprep it or an equivalent, but it's lacking that granularity around roles and features without, obviously, scripting, which you'd need to do. And when it comes to service templates, what do they offer as an alternative? Well, you can combine virtual machines into VApps. But a VApp is almost like it's a point in time. It's now. These VMs are running. We've grouped them together. They're the VApp. What if we want to deploy VApps into our vSphere environment? Well, I'm going to have to change those and convert those into an OVF. So it's not necessarily a native piece of vSphere. It's something I've got to do separately. But at the same time, when I'm deploying it, I don't have the same level of granularity as I've got within the service templates. It's lacking that level of granularity that I've got within VMM. The beauty of VMM, though, is it can manage Hyper-V, vSphere, and Zen Server. So this whole templating and provisioning, it doesn't matter where you're delivering it to. So there's value whether you've got investments in VMware, whether you've got investments in Microsoft or Citrix. If you want to deliver the similar level of service templates, then that's where you start to look towards something like Application Director, part of the vFabric group of technologies within VMware's portfolio. And this is an extra product. It's not particularly cheap. It's quite an expensive add-on, but it is delivering what they classify as blueprints. So service templates, multi-tiered applications that can be delivered into vCloud Director or vClouds. But that's a key difference there because, as I said before, with the service templates in VMM, I can deploy a service template just to a collection of hosts. It doesn't have to be a cloud. If I'm not ready to make that jump towards clouds, and I'm just happy with deploying services to regular hosts, I can do that. With VMware and with vFabric Application Director, I have to be using vCloud Director. I have to be using that configuration to be able to use the Application Director technology. And those clouds, those vClouds, it's all about VMware. There's no Hyper-V in there, there's no Zen Server, that's it. And if you're a pure VMware shop and you've no plans to change or introduce other hypervisors, then that would work for you fine. But for other organizations who are looking to diversify and looking to combine, for whatever reason, certain workloads on certain hypervisors or whatever, then you're not going to be able to do that with the VMware environment. You're going to have to look at alternatives, with System Center 2012 being one of them. Yes, the role-based self-service is in there through vCloud Director, but what about requesting? Up until recently, there was a product, Request Manager, that was in the portfolio. You could buy it, and it enabled, I guess, application owners, business unit owners, or whoever, to request capacity or request the ability to do something in relation to vCloud Director. But that end of life, it was deprecated, it went. And the functionality is moving towards Service Manager, an acquisition through the infra technology. But there's nothing out there on Service Manager yet. There's no references, there's very little data. There's a data sheet on the website, and that's about it. And without that request capability, it's missing a key element of that whole life cycle of an application. Whether you're using an alternative service desk or not, it's important. If you've implemented a service desk, it's usually because you want to control access to stuff and let people request through a service catalog resources, capacity, simple things like access to certain areas of the infrastructure. That doesn't exist in the portfolio today. You know, we don't know how proven it is. But with Service Manager 2012 and previously Service Manager 2010, there's reference cases, it's well integrated, and you've seen the demonstrations now. With the cloud services process pack we make available, you've got a very quick to deploy service catalog that has the common requests in relation to private cloud. I would like to increase my capacity. I would like access to this cloud. I would like to be able to deploy a service. And it's integrated from the word go, which makes it easier to adopt. If you're not using Service Manager 2012, or part of System Center 2012, then tools like Orchestrator become incredibly useful if you want to gel this together with your own service desk tools you may have in your environment already. And like I said, when it comes to consumption, when it comes to delivering multi-tiered services, it is just about VApps in the cloud. I struggle to deliver just an individual VM. It's all about VApps. When it comes to application focus, so that's the construction, the delivery. What about the maintenance and the ongoing management of the app? So we've pushed it out, or we're in the development phase of the app. How does this all relate to System Center? Well, in VMM, in fact, in System Center 2012, let me take a step back. The beauty of System Center 2012 when it comes to maintaining your fabric and your applications is there's so much choice. Some organizations will just use kind of out-of-the-box WSUS, not part of System Center specifically, but they'll use that for patching their infrastructure. Others will use Config Manager, and they'll use it for the entire estate. But alternatively, some may say, you know what? We're the data center admin team here. We're managing our fabric. We don't want you pushing out policy from Config Manager. We want to manage that whole process from VMM. And built into VMM now is the ability to define patch baselines and patch and maintain that fabric, your host, your VMM server, straight from Virtual Machine Manager. So if you're the data center admin, that's how you would maintain that application or that fabric infrastructure. But when it comes to maintaining the apps and the guest OSs, VMM's not going to do that. VMM's just about patching the fabric. So Config Manager may be the logical choice. But it's not like they're night and day. They work together to enable you to patch the environment as a whole. So they're very well tailored together. But the beauty of the Microsoft platform with System Center 2012 is it's not just about virtualization. It's not just about private cloud. How many people in the room have still got some physical stuff that's not virtualized? Exactly. And that's reflective of a lot of organizations. So if you've got management tools that just do virtualization, you're going to have another set of management tools. But with System Center 2012, it's enabling you to extend beyond that. The licensing is very flexible. If you're going for virtualization and high density, you choose System Center 2012, Data Center. If you're going for physical infrastructure or lightly virtualized, you choose System Center 2012, Standard. And that's as simple as that. You get all the SQL bits, you get all the agents you need, all of the components, and you tailor and integrate the bits that you want to use, and you cherry pick the key items that are important to your business today and going into the future. But that extension beyond the private cloud means you can group everything together and not effectively introduce more point solutions to manage physical, virtual, guests, and so on. As I said before, that service management angle through Service Manager is becoming more and more important because giving out capacity, giving out resource, yes, you can do it for so long, but soon enough, it's going to sprawl out of control. So having that request, that approval process, that service catalog is very attractive to a lot of organizations. And organizations that have service desks today or tools from the likes of HP, BMC, and so on, if they're looking to integrate them with other tools and automate, that's again where System Center and tools like Orchestrator really come in. And when it comes to automation, the beauty of something like Orchestrator is if you can imagine it, you can probably automate it. It could be something simple. If this file appears on a server, do this. Or it could be something very complex, like when a new user joins the company, HR fill in a form, and that triggers all sorts of different actions, which results in the end in a new virtual desktop being spun up for that user. There's all sorts of different ways you can take it, but automation needs to be relevant. It can't just be there for automation's sake. So having automation that integrates the likes of BMC and CA and IBM and VMware with System Center and the other different tools makes it much more relevant. So having automation and, in particular, System Center Orchestrator that does integrate with all of those different components that you may have in your environment, that makes it easier to start to build those workflows, those runbooks. And as we go forward, we're seeing more and more integration packs being delivered for System Center Orchestrator that's enabling organizations to automate across a wider variety of tools and systems. But these applications, once we've deployed them, how do we know that they're running healthily? What is an application? Is it a workload? Is it a product like Exchange, or is it an in-house application? Well, with Microsoft and with System Center 2012, you've got the flexibility to monitor both. So if you've deployed Exchange or SQL Server or SharePoint or a third-party application, whether it's running on a Windows platform or not, we can monitor that and we can give you deep application insight, whether it's a web-based app, whether it's a workload, whether it's a Microsoft app or not. And that deep application insight is helping organizations understand just how efficient their applications are. But also, it leads nicely into a relationship that we're really starting to see come to fruition between dev and the ops team. Because for so long, you know, you give the developers some virtual machines and they'd be there writing their code and then spinning out applications, the smoke coming from the keyboard, you know, spinning out these apps. And the app would be delivered and it would run fine for a while, and then all of a sudden it starts to grind and the finger pointing starts. You know, it's like, oh, it's because it's virtualized, or it's because it's running on your infrastructure. No, it's the app, and the ops guys are saying, no, it's your application. It's obvious it's your application. Much finger pointing, and then eventually things will get sorted out. But with the beauty of the System Center 2012 solution and the integration we have with tools like Visual Studio, that relationship with DevOps can really start to prosper. And let me explain what I mean when I click the mouse. In terms of components and in terms of technology, Virtual Machine Manager, managing Hyper-V host, and going forward, obviously, vSphere and Zen Server as well. So I just used Hyper-V as an example. Integrated with Team Foundation Server, both today's release and going forward into a future release. And on the developer's workstation, Test and Lab Manager. So the lab management element of Team Foundation Server is enabling organizations to harness the power of their development environment, so Visual Studio, all that kind of stuff, so the developers are working away in that environment, but they're spinning up the virtual infrastructure at the same time to run their applications. And it's all in harmony with what Virtual Machine Manager is doing and managing around the Hyper-V host. So we see that in action. Lab Center is what the developer would be using to build out the environment. But its integration and its connections with Visual Studio and how they test and how they build the app is very, very strong. It's not just about providing functionality to spin up VMs for developers to use. It's about how we can integrate it with their test process in a very granular way. So when something is, there's a bug identified in the code, or when they're developing the application, they can trigger snapshots of all of the VMs within that environment. At a certain point in time, they can add videos to it, they can really link right from the code to the specific point of the VM and share that with the rest of the development team so they can collaborate and work effectively. So you just wouldn't get that from a tool that just provides the infrastructure. You've really got to focus on how it's tied back to the software development environment as well. And when you see the app has been delivered, so it's been pushed out, go back to the scenario I talked about before where you've got the developers and the ops team just pointing at each other with the blame. In Operations Manager, if an alert fires for that application, set resolution state, assign to engineering, and it goes through to Visual Studio. So the links with the development environment are very, very strong, and it's helping to connect that DevOps relationship in a much more granular way. And as we go forward with now System Center 2012 and future releases of Visual Studio, that's only going to get stronger. It's only going to enable more exciting scenarios around private clouds. So when it comes to VMware, what are they doing around this effectively maintenance and delivery of these applications? Well, there's nothing wrong with vCenter Update Manager. You know, anybody who uses it, you know, it patches the ESXi host now, very easily, straightforward, easy to use, nothing wrong from it from that perspective. But it just does that. That's all it's aiming to do. In fact, in the vSphere 5 release, they removed the ability to patch inside the guest. So prior to that, you could. Now it's just about patching the VMs, and the VM tools that exist within the virtual machines. So you're going to need, if you want a pure VMware infrastructure, additional technologies to be able to reach inside the guest operating system. And to go inside the guest operating system, you're going to be looking at vCenter Ops or vCenter Operations Management Suite. And there's four editions of this: Standard, Advanced, Enterprise, and Enterprise Plus. But only the Enterprise Plus edition will allow you to start to go inside the guest, utilizing some of the technology they acquired from EMC with the Ionics and Configuration Manager, effectively. But where it's, where that's interesting is VCOPS is a pretty interesting tool around how it monitors workloads and applications, monitors the VMs from that perspective. And you can overlay from a graphical perspective, so you've got a performance graph, and you can see where changes have been made in the virtual machine, and it's pulling that information from VCOPS Enterprise Plus. But the cost of VCOPS Enterprise Plus compared to Enterprise, Advanced, or Standard is incredibly significant. And it's just focused on the configuration. So it's not providing that level of overall control like System Center would do. As I said before, we're not quite sure what is going on with Service Manager. There's no, is it integrated? Is it integrated with vSphere? There's no, nobody knows at this point. But Request Manager, which was integrated, has been deprecated. When we look at automation, the plugins for vCenter Orchestrator, very, very focused on VMware. The only hardware plugin is Cisco. There's a couple for PowerShell. There's some very VMware-centric ones for Update Manager, vSphere. Obviously, on the Microsoft side with Orchestrator, there's a lot of System Center integration packs. But look beyond that, and there's HP, there's BMC, there's CA. So able to integrate with different elements of your infrastructure that aren't just VMware or aren't just Microsoft. And when it comes to that application insight, which is very, very important to understand what's going on in your apps, they don't have that workload monitoring. So I can use vCenter Operations, Standard Edition, Advanced Edition. I can monitor my VMs, and I can see very attractive dashboards of health and risk and efficiency and see what's going on from that perspective. But if I went in and sabotaged Exchange, not that I would do that, but if I did, if it was, you know, Friday afternoon, I thought, well, let's have some fun. If I sabotaged Exchange, it wouldn't be able to tell me anything about Exchange or SQL or SharePoint because it doesn't have that knowledge and it doesn't have that framework, the management pack framework, that allows Operations Manager to go beyond and monitor those key workloads and applications. So it's missing that element. But you can monitor your web applications and some other applications within the environment using that Application Performance Manager, an extra tool, an extra cost. It's built in to System Center 2012. And when we come to DevOps, Lab Manager, a lot of people still use Lab Manager today, but it's end of life. It's been deprecated, supported till the middle of next year, and then that's it. The push is towards vCloud Director. But what I talked about before when I was talking about the DevOps scenario is it's very easy to provide a portal to provision VMs and stuff like that, infrastructure. But it's harder to tie it to a development environment. And that's what Microsoft has done with System Center 2012 and TFS. With VMware, that Lab Manager, that's gone. It wasn't integrated with the development environment anyway. It was still about provisioning the VMs and the infrastructure. And that's how it will be with vCloud Director. It's good at what it does, don't get me wrong, but it's not connected to that development environment that the developers are using. Even some of the Spring Source tools, they're not connected with vCloud Director. So you've got two separate islands there. And finally, we come to protection. When it comes to protection with Microsoft, hopefully, after this week, you think DPM. And DPM, for me, Data Protection Manager, is probably the most undervalued tool in the System Center suite. It's a hidden gem. It's incredibly useful at protecting key Microsoft workloads like SQL, SharePoint, Exchange, Hyper-V, whether it's virtualized or not. And that's a key element. We touched on it before. A lot of you have physical workloads still. So having a solution that can protect both is attractive. But new in 2012 is the ability to extend beyond just the Microsoft apps we provide in the box and start to protect generic workloads that can integrate through the VSS framework. So we can protect those as well. It's not just about Microsoft. Heterogeneous environments are very important to us. When it's integrated in with Ops Manager, you get a lot more granularity about who can access what, who can do what, how can we control that access and the relevant role-based administration. And how many people still either themselves or have customers that back up to tape? Yeah, That's obviously important to some people. It's not going to go away. Disc is obviously relatively cheap. It's relatively reliable now. But tape still isn't important, perhaps from a compliance and archiving perspective, to a lot of organizations. And DPM can handle that. And in the box, there is DPM to DPM 4DR. So for some environments, having DPM protect DPM across a network, across a WAN or whatever, that's a low-cost DR scenario. Now, admittedly, you know, first to hold the hands up, should site A go bang on site B, it's still a restoration from that backup. But could that be automated with something like Orchestrator? Absolutely. Is the pack there? Is the DPM integration pack there for Orchestrator? Absolutely. So you could build that, but that's not a product today from Microsoft. Going forward, things will change around DR from our side of things. But we're already seeing, actually, partners say, OK, take NetApp as a good example. We've got NetApp storage. It's a customer example. We've got NetApp storage. We've got Hyper-V. We've got System Center. What could we do to automate the failover between sites? Integrating with things like SnapMirror for replication, integrating with site failover, and so on. Well, with what was a Parlis, now Orchestrator, NetApp have released the pack to do that. And they walk you through how you can effectively fail over between sites using System Center. So in the event of a disaster or a planned failover, you can hit the button and off it goes. Or alternatively, you could have it triggered by something like an alert. Now, obviously, if an alert fires and it triggers your whole site failover, obviously it's got to be a pinpointed alert to do that, but you could do it if you wanted to, if you wanted that level of autonomy. But with VMware, data recovery is restricted to VMs. It comes in the box. It's in the box within vSphere. It's not something separate you have to necessarily license. But it's just about VMs. It's just about the virtual infrastructure. And it's not about workloads. It's about the VM. Exchange, no, it doesn't matter. If it's in the VM, it gets backed up. But if it's, we don't offer any kind of mailbox recovery or any database recovery as such. It's just about the VM. And there's no extensibility. So if it's virtualized, we'll catch it. If it's not, it's not. And it's not on our radar. So partners often look, and customers often look to offerings from the likes of Veeam or Symantec or a storage vendor's offering to protect their virtual infrastructure on VMware. And these data recovery appliances, they're not particularly aware of each other. So I could get in the situation where I could have two VMware data recovery servers, appliances, and they could potentially back up the same thing because they're not sharing that information. They've not got that knowledge. No tape backup. And data recovery offers nothing in terms of disaster recovery. But SRM is there. And hats off, you know, SRM is a good product. It enables that site-to-site failover between so main site, disaster recovery site, site A, site B, however you want to position it. But it's a considerable addition. And going forward in Windows Server 8, now Windows Server 2012, Hyper-V Replica is going to enable that in-box replication and that site failover in the box within Windows Server and Hyper-V. So that's it for the app. And that was the big section. These are a lot smaller, don't worry. So cross-platform. When it comes to cross-platform, not everyone is going with one vendor. It's not going to be a pure Microsoft play in an environment. It's not going to be a pure VMware play in an environment. There's going to be a mix. So heterogeneous support of different environments is important. But for those customers who want to spin up turnkey solutions, they want to introduce infrastructure quickly and rapidly into their environment, the Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track Program, which has just entered its 2.0 stage, would enable an organization to choose the pre-validated, pre-configured option that's right for them. So from the likes of Dell or HP or NetApp or IBM or whoever, there's 12 options, and you can choose the one that's right for you. But they all come with System Center and Hyper-V, and they enable that building of that private cloud very rapidly. But if you want to build the cloud on your terms using the components you've already invested in, then the private cloud also has reference architectures and deployment guides that you can utilize. But when it comes to System Center and VMM, managing VMware, managing Citrix, managing Hyper-V, all from the one platform, And all of the things that plug into System Center from that point forward, all of the things that plug into VMM, like Orchestrator and Service Manager, because we've abstracted away the hypervisor, we can provide extra levels of value on top. So delivering Server App V to a VMware vSphere VM, because we've raised that level of abstraction. And when it comes to guest OS support, it's very easy to say, oh, you know, stuff will run in a virtual machine, we'll just go for it. But you need to be supported. And Microsoft is very clear about what it supports. It's about in lifecycle guest operating systems, and we support certain distributions of Zuse, of Red Hat, and of CentOS. And they're documented on our website, and they're supported configurations from a virtual processor perspective as well. And that's slightly different in the VMware world, where VMware will support all sorts of different operating systems. But the term support is one that, you know, can swing either way. There's a difference between support and compatibility. So VMware say we support NT and DOS 6.22. You think, and I've told the customer, yes, we support DOS 6.22. So they go ahead and run DOS 6.22 on vSphere. And DOS 6.22 has a problem. Who are you going to call? Well, the OS vendor. Okay, I'll ring Microsoft. We don't support that, I'm afraid. It's end of life quite a while ago. So support is not the same as compatibility. So you have to be very careful. Microsoft support statements are very defined as to what we support inside the guest operating system. And when it comes to integration, it's not just about Microsoft, as I said before. So using tools like Orchestrator, plugging into what you've already invested in, it's not about somebody steaming through the door and saying, everything you've done in the past is wrong. Get rid and move over. It's about, okay, you've invested in VMware, you've invested in some Citrix Xen server, and you've got a service desk tool from such and such. Let's see how we can build a private cloud around that and help you lower the cost of the overall management of that infrastructure through System Center. And when it comes to the apps, Windows is an incredibly popular platform for a variety of different applications, not just .NET. Java, PHP, and so on, there's a whole host of them. When it comes to development environments, Visual Studio, incredibly popular. We saw how it ties in to the System Center 2012 and the whole lab provisioning. It's an incredibly powerful way of delivering private cloud in relation to a development environment. When it comes to VMware, these pre-validated configurations, it's just about vBlock, which are pretty big in size. It's about FlexPod from NetApp and Cisco, and more recently vSpecs as well from EMC, but vSpecs is also coming with Hyper-V. So that's one of our fast tracks. And it's all about VMware. I'm just going to manage that. And that's why partners like Hotlink, who are on the floor in the expo hall, not literally, heavy night, they're in the show floor, and they've got offerings that they can offer to VMware infrastructures that rely on vCenter but want to embrace alternatives like Hyper-V, or KVM, or Xen Server. Now, I would obviously say, well, VMM could do some of that as well, but you know, there's for and against on both. And VMware don't build guest OSs. So remember that support statement. Just be careful. Rely on that Microsoft-supported applications from a Windows perspective when you're running them on VMware. And that's why we work with VMware and others on things like the Server Virtualization Validation Program. So you can ensure that your apps in your environment or your customer's environment are supported on that hypervisor. So we needed to do that to make sure there was clarity, because people were starting to get confused and starting to get into gray areas of support. When it comes to some of the integration points, vCenter Ops, as I said before, the number of integration packs, it's a decent number, so over 10, but it's very focused on just VMware. So if I want to start triggering stuff in from vCenter onto a NetApp storage device, or I want to start triggering stuff into a HP tool or a BMC service desk tool, then I'm going to need a lot of work to do that, because the packs don't exist. But with Orchestrator, they're in there. And finally, their application platform, that new kind of venture within the VMware portfolio, very focused on Spring, Groovy, and Grails. Now, that's not detrimental, that's not the end of the world, but it's not necessarily integrated with the rest of their story. You know, can I use vCops to monitor Spring applications? Not today. So there's a disconnect. And then we get to the foundation, and this is where we start talking about Hyper-V. And Hyper-V is really starting to kick on in the market. Today, it's the fastest growing hypervisor. It's taking share in the market, and it's setting up for a really strong foundation when we move into the next release. But today, people often think, oh, I didn't know you did live migration. I didn't know that was in R2. You know, we often get into these kind of myths around, oh, I just didn't know that feature was in there. So live migration, no cost, the ability to move those virtual machines around. Now, today, I'll be the first to admit, when you migrate a virtual machine from host to host, you can do one at a time. And VMware with vSphere, you can migrate 4 simultaneous VMs on gigabit Ethernet and 8 on 10 gigabit Ethernet. And that's fine. You know, that's how it is today. And going forward in Windows Server 2012, that will change. So we'll allow that simultaneous live migration. So today we'll do it serially, we'll queue up the live migrations, and in the future we'll do it simultaneously. But when it comes to resiliency, clustering in the box, there's some perception out there that clustering is difficult. But in 2008 and subsequently in R2, it's an extremely simple and streamlined method. It's a wizard of 7 or 8 clicks to build a cluster. Once you've obviously connected all of the wires and the storage and that kind of stuff. But just to build the cluster, really straightforward. And you saw it in the keynote the other day. You saw Vijay click, drag, drop, clustered. Very straightforward, and we're trying as hard as we can to make it even easier. And it's relatively straightforward today. Just a couple of clicks, and you've built that resilient clustering infrastructure. And when it comes to density, I want to get more VMs on my hosts so I can reduce the cost. When you think about private cloud, the more density, the greater levels of density you can achieve, the overall cost of the infrastructure drops. So as you scale up, you're reducing your cost, and your per VM cost obviously drops as well. But when it comes to scalability, performance, familiarity, they're key assets of Hyper-V. It's just built into Windows. The scale, it delivers great performance, and we've got some performance metrics that we've worked on. We've published these benchmarks, and they've been available for a long time. So a massive number of mailboxes on a single Hyper-V host. When it comes to SharePoint and SQL, so really pushing great levels of consolidation and scale on today's Hyper-V. That's with a 4 virtual processor VM, which we know isn't the industry leader today. You know, there are alternatives out there from Citrix and VMware that offer greater numbers of virtual processors in VMs. But when we start to look at Windows Server 8 very shortly, we'll see that that is changing. And it's a foundation for the future, remember? So today, we're achieving those kind of numbers, and we're working on some stuff at the moment that we'll publish towards the TechEd timeframe that will showcase some more of our applications virtualized on Hyper-V. So the key point is, you can do it on Hyper-V, you can virtualize these mission-critical workloads, and you can do it with confidence, and you can manage them with System Center. So it's not just about getting it running and getting it running fast. It's about managing that workload as well. And as we've said before, System Center really helps to deliver that. But not a lot of people know that actually there's another way to get hold of Hyper-V. A lot of people just assume Hyper-V, Windows Server, I buy Windows Server, I get Hyper-V. That's the flow. But actually, Hyper-V Server is a completely free download. It's a lovely blue screen. Something you won't hear very often in that order. But you just install it. It's pretty quick to install. It's a smaller footprint than the full Windows Server, but it's still a Windows Server. It's still a WIM image, which means you can still manage it with your tools. You can still patch it with your tools. You can still monitor it with your tools, whether they be Microsoft System Center or alternatives. Back it up as well. But it's a free download. It doesn't come with any licenses for Windows Server guests, so you still have to think about that, the same as you would on a VMware platform, on a Zen Server platform, whatever. But it does contain just the hypervisor, the driver model, and the core virtualization components it needs, like clustering and the virtualization bits. But it is that smaller footprint, less of an overhead, less of an attack surface, reduced patching. It's all beneficial. But as I said, it is a WIM image. So if you want to deploy it with Configuration Manager, go for it. You can do that. But built into Virtual Machine Manager 2012 is the ability to deploy, and you saw it in the keynote again, physical infrastructure. So I can deploy Hyper-V to a physical host, a blank physical host. There's nothing stopping that Hyper-V image being Hyper-V server. And it's got all of those features. So it's not a free edition that we say, try it, and then you'll hit this limit and you can't use this feature. It's got everything. It's got all of the tick boxes that Windows Server Hyper-V has got. But it's completely free. And will that continue as we move forward into Windows Server 2012? Absolutely. Okay, so there's going to be no change there in terms of it's going to be a free offering. And you can download it now. The beta's available. And when we compare with some of these free editions, ESXi 5, free download, Zen Server 6, free edition, free to download, and Hyper-V Server 2008 R2 SP1, to give it its full name, you can see that, yes, you know, ESXi does support a greater number of host processors today, 160 versus 64. But 64 cores on a host is still a fair amount, and it covers most platforms that get deployed today. You know, two-socket, 8-core, two-socket, 16-core. You know, that's well within what Hyper-V supports today. The VSNMP support, so the number of virtual processors is 4 today. But remember, those workloads, those performance metrics we published, they were on 4 virtual processor VMs. So imagine when we go forward to Windows Server 2012, what we're going to be able to do then. You know, it's an exciting time. When it comes to the features, though, so some of the key capabilities that you can utilize for agility, for density, for resiliency. With Hyper-V Server, I've got live migration included. I've got clustering included. So up to 16 nodes, 1,000 VMs plus, you know, we can do that. And dynamic memory is included. So you'll see that with VMware's ESXi, you can download it and you can consolidate. But if you want to start to move stuff around and vMotion and fail over, that's when you're going to go to vSphere. And that's fine because that's, you know, customers understand that. But if you're looking to embrace and start with virtualization with Hyper-V, you can do it very cost effectively. But we do get common questions, common myths. VMware has a feature known as blah is a common one. We do this. Do Microsoft have an alternative? And what is it called? You know, do Microsoft do vMotion? You know, that kind of thing. And DRS is a common one. Popular feature on VMware's platform, the ability to automate moving of virtual machines from place to place with no interruption. So using the vMotion technology, but moving stuff around intelligently based on changing conditions. Now, in the past, with Virtual Machine Manager, in the 2008 R2 release, when you combine that with System Center Operations Manager, it unlocks something called PRO, Performance Resource Optimization. And what that would do is Ops Manager would be monitoring the environment, and if it thought stuff should be moved around and balanced, VMM would do the balancing. In 2012, VMM handles all of that itself. So it's a much more simplified adoption of that kind of capability. But Pro hasn't gone away. So Pro is still built in. So if you do combine VMM and Ops Manager still, Pro still is still got a part to play because partners can extend Pro. Because, yeah, great, dynamic optimization will balance the workloads, balance the VMs. But if you've got a load balancer or a Netscaler or you've got some kind of HBA in your system that can be monitored by Ops Manager, if the management pack for that particular piece of hardware is pro-enabled, that can bring about movement of VMs as well. So it's extremely powerful and flexible, both in simplicity, just through enabling DO, and then extending it with Pro. And just to give you an idea, a very quick one, let me go to my environment, go to my VMs and services. I've piled all of my VMs onto one host at the moment in my minute two-node cluster that I've got in my poor man's lab, but never mind. We don't talk about that. I'm not bitter. It's not quite keynote stature, but never mind. So to enable dynamic optimization properties of the host group, this is just a folder, if you will, that helps me to organize my host. DO. And then I say, okay, automatically load balance. How aggressive do I want it to be? Really aggressive? Not so much. You know, do I want to do it even if the savings are small, or do I want to do it even if they're large? You know, it's up to you. And you can set the thresholds for CPU, memory, disk, and so on. And if I want to put the power into play, so power down hosts to save a bit more capacity and move VMs onto fewer hosts, maybe over the weekend, then I can do that here with a lovely calendar where I can select all of the different times. And that's going to manage that and waking the servers up and so on. And that's all I need to do. I'm not going to enable power on that on this occasion. But I'll do this, and I could leave it for 5 minutes, and it's going to go away, and it's going to assess what's going on. But if I do it manually, and I say optimize hosts, it's going to say, you know what? You're hammering one host and not doing a lot with the other. Let's start that move. And I can click optimize, and it's going to go away, and it's going to start migrating live those VMs across. So that was, you know, that's a simple DO, dynamic optimization, but that needed two components in the previous wave of System Center. Now it's just built into VMM. Okay, so it's simplified. It makes it a lot more easy to utilize. But it's often an overlooked feature, and it's often a feature that is assumed only a VMware have. But that's a very similar capability that's dynamic optimization and the power management. What else do we get? VMware can hot add virtual processors and memory to VMs with no interruption. Can Microsoft deliver anything similar? We can hot add storage today. So I can hot add a disk, a running disk to a, not a running disk, a disk to a running virtual machine. I'm not quite sure what a running disk would be. But in terms of the hot add of CPU, obviously there's guest OS dependent. So yes, you can do it on vSphere, but it is dependent on that guest OS. But if that guest OS does support it, so take Windows Server Data Center Edition, for example, 2008 R2 in a guest on vSphere. Yes, I can hot add that CPU, but I can't take it out again. So once it's in, it's in. So if I'm a service provider, if I'm providing a kind of pay-as-you-go offering to customers, and I add the CPU, and they get charged accordingly, if I want to then drop that down because the workload's tailed off, I'm going to have to shut down that VM. So there's downtime associated to get that CPU back out. And it's the same with memory. So whilst it's an interesting capability, it wasn't on the priority list for Hyper-V, you know, now and going forward in the 2012. But then finally, one that we hear quite a lot, and if you're a Microsoft partner, you'll probably have heard it. If you're a customer, you might have seen these capabilities. We have a feature known as fault tolerance. So the ability to create a hot standby of a VM on another host. So we have host one, host two, make a VM fault tolerant, and effectively a running clone is on running on host two. A hot standby, if you will. And if the physical host number one goes bang, the VM goes down, but then the secondary VM takes over just like that. Cool. Yeah, great technology. However, the caveats outweigh the cons outweigh the pros in this particular example. So whilst you're gaining an extra level of resiliency from a host failure, if something happens in the VM, if the app goes, oh, I can't handle it and keels over, it does it in both, you know, in the replicated VM as well. So it's not protecting from any application failure. And when it comes to scale and density, I can only have four of those VMs on one host today and only one virtual processor in that VM. So it's not for those scaled applications. Now, I'm sure this will be addressed in the future, and we'll see what happens when it does. But when we compare using VMware's terminology on the left-hand side there, vMotion, data recovery, distributed switch, and so on, even today with Hyper-V and System Center 2012, it's ticking a lot of the boxes. But if we span the conversation around and said, okay, let's focus this on management. We're at a management summit. Let's focus this on how the tools work together to deliver really efficient private cloud through automation, through monitoring of the workloads and the applications, through service template delivery and so on. There will be a lot of yeses on the Microsoft side and very few on the VMware side. But you'd need to be adding on more and more products on the VMware side to try and achieve what System Center 2012 can do today. But in the future, things are only going to get stronger from a Hyper-V perspective specifically. Key things that I'd call out. Replica is awesome. It's an incredibly cool technology and so flexible. If I'm a service provider and I'm working with smaller organizations, or if I'm a customer who's got a central site and a very distributed set of stores, perhaps around a geographic location, Hyper-V Replica would enable me completely flexibly of certain hardware types, it just wouldn't matter, to replica into my central site. So all of those remote sites are replicating into my central hub. And they could be running different types of servers, they could be running different network infrastructures, but it's very, very flexible about how it does it using asynchronous replication. But if you want to use storage replication, you know, that's fine. That's where our storage vendors come in. And we've optimized things like cluster shared volumes in Windows Server 2012 to work more effectively with things like storage replication, because we realized that was a challenge in the previous release, or the current release. But when we talk about scale, you realize quickly that I ran out of icons here, so I just had to use scales for each of them. Originality was going out of the window at this point. But yeah, huge VM scale. So this is up there with whatever else is in the industry now in terms of the highest levels of scale. For both VMs, massive scale for virtual processors, 32-way, up to a terabyte of RAM, but there's no entitlements. There's nothing to say, okay, you can use it, but if you want to use the maximum amount of your memory, you're going to need to pay a little bit more. It's not like that. It's very, if you've got it, you can use it. And with the scalability we've got, it's not per edition. So 32-way virtual machines are in the free Hyper-V server, and they're in Windows Server Hyper-V. You can use it either. There's no, okay, if you've only gone for standard edition, you only have 4-way. It's 32 across the board. So that monster VM on Hyper-V is now going to be here. When it comes to hosts, 160 logical procs, 2 terabytes of memory. Does anybody have a server with 2 terabytes of memory? 1 terabyte? Half a terabyte? Yes, you're at the back. There you go. Mine inevitably don't, unfortunately, so I have server envy, but never mind. But the number of virtual machines per host, immense scale. So yes, we support 64-node clusters going forward. Do you need to build a 64-node cluster to run 4,000 VMs? No, because we support 1,000 VMs per host. Obviously, it's going to be quite a large host or really, really small VMs, but you know, we can do it. When it comes to storage, we're really trying to help organizations utilize reprovision storage, use some of the capabilities like storage spaces, like the thin provisioning, the iSCSI target that's built in, but mainly from a Hyper-V perspective, harness file shares to utilize as a Hyper-V storage repository. So just run a VM from a file share. You know, if you're interested in that kind of thing, you know, talk to someone like NetApp, for example, spinning out a SIF share on a filer and presenting that to a Hyper-V set of Hyper-V hosts and just dropping the VMs on there. You know, that's attractive to a lot of organizations. So Hyper-V over SMB is going to be a new way of delivering Hyper-V and scale-out infrastructure. And when we start to talk about storage, a lot of investments have been made in storage within Windows Server 2012. So offloading certain tasks to the SAN. So things like a storage migration. We'll send that to the SAN. The SAN can handle that. It'll do it much quicker, much more efficiently. We can save resource on the hosts. Virtual fiber channel through to the guests. So guest clustering is one way of increasing resiliency of an application that's virtualized. But today with VMware, a guest cluster can be 2 nodes. And when you do build a guest cluster, you can't vMotion it anywhere. They don't support that. But with Microsoft, we fully support the migration. We support the dynamic memory within guest cluster nodes. So you can build and not sacrifice these infrastructures. You can build them very efficiently. And with virtual fiber channel, you're presenting fiber channel storage right through to the virtual machine. Okay. And finally, the upcoming, or well, it's here, I suppose, but native 4K disk support, so future-proofing from that perspective. vSphere 5 today doesn't support that. We've talked, I mean, you've seen this in the keynote, live storage migration, moving the disks around or moving them to different places. Maybe you've got a VM that's got 3 virtual disks and they're all on the same LUN on the SAN, but you'd like to move the VHDs and separate them out onto different tiered LUNs. Maybe one's SSD, maybe one's SATA, maybe one's SAS. We'll do it that way. We can do that flexibly. Or you can just move the whole lot with nothing but a network cable, as Jeff showed. So really powerful and flexible in and out of clusters. So that 64-node cluster I talked about before, clustering just simply now becomes the boundary of resiliency, not migration. Because with these migration technologies, you can move in and out of clusters, between clusters, it just doesn't matter. It's completely flexible. And thankfully, Nick Teaming is now in the box, which I'm pleased about. I think Jeff Woolsey is very pleased about. And it just means that it's simple for our IT admins to deploy. You know, select the NICs, right-click, create team. Oh, you've got Broadcom, you've got Intel, that's fine, we'll handle that. You want to aggregate, you want to load balance, we'll handle that. It's integrated, it's in the box, it's a clear, consistent support statement. So if you have problems with Nick teaming, you come to Microsoft. Okay. And when it comes to extensibility and networking, the open switch that's in Hyper-V, we're already seeing partners start to plug into it. So Cisco, NEC, Five9 with their virtual firewall, and InMon for monitoring. So we're seeing partners already build solutions to help extend what the extensible switch can do. But it's not a replacement exercise. With VMware, the distributed switch, you use VMware's, or you use Cisco's, or you use IBM's. On the Microsoft side, you plug in where these solutions fit. And it's solutions for filtering, for forwarding, for inspection. The solutions will be available, and there's partners here at the show that will gladly talk to you about that. And you saw network virtualization, I'm sure, in the keynote as well. You know, really flexible about how we can onboard users into an environment. Can VMware do that today? You can do something similar with VXLAN, but you need vSphere, Enterprise Plus, and the Cisco Nexus to do it. And if you've not got those bits, or you've not got one of those bits, you're not going to be able to take advantage. But with Hyper-V going forward in Windows Server 2012, if you've got a mixed infrastructure, if you've got different networking hardware, you can still use network virtualization to help onboard and host different multi-tenanted infrastructures. And finally, networking enhancements. So if you've got applications that are extremely performance intensive from a network perspective, SRIOV will be very much of use to you. So SRIOV, hardware capability within certain NICs, gigabit or 10 gigabit Ethernet, that effectively presents itself through to a virtual machine, shared between multiple virtual machines. It's not just a one-to-one relationship. But the performance and throughput is significantly improved. Do VMware have anything similar? Well, DirectPath I/O is often compared. But DirectPath I/O on the VMware side effectively presents a PCI device, which could be a NIC, through to the virtual machine. And it's got an exclusive access to that, one-to-one. But by doing that, you lose some of the flexibility. You lose the vMotion capability. So you're sacrificing agility for the sake of performance. But with SRIOV, you get the benefit of both, because I can move SRIOV VMs around completely flexibly. I can even move an SRIOV VM from a host that's got SRIOV to one that hasn't, and it's live with no interruption. So incredible flexibility when you're thinking about, well, I want the highest performance, and I want that flexibility at the same time. And finally, it may not be applicable, but more and more organizations who virtualize in branch offices, you know, are looking for that extra level of security. If I can walk in with a badge that I've made in paint or whatever and say, yep, I've come to fix your servers in your retail store or whatever, and I can just walk out with it into the van and off I go, if that's encrypted with something like BitLocker, my data is secure. It doesn't get over the physical security element and how lapsed security was on that occasion, but the data is secure. But with 2012 and Hyper-V, we can BitLocker not only the local drives where VHDs and VHDX files may be running, but also clustered drives. So that was new in 2012. We could only do the local storage before. So if you're concerned about encryption, you want to protect that sensitive data, maybe you've got a compliance that you've got to adhere to, then that's going to be of use. And finally, ensuring that SLA is in place, so quality of service from a network perspective, built in to the product as well. Okay? But VMware offer that kind of capability today as well, in a network QoS and storage QoS. When it comes to QoS on the Microsoft side, it's network-based, but obviously network-based storage would be applicable for that as well. So when we compare and we bring in Hyper-V and System Center 2012, it's a similar story. It's just certain bits have improved and changed. So yes, the vCPUs per VM has increased, 32-way. We now offer, obviously, DPM and Hyper-V replica as options to how people can protect their workloads. Live migration has the three different options, live migration, storage, and also the shared nothing. So there's VAT improvements across the board. And when it comes to systems management, that's a constant. So even if you wanted to embrace Hyper-V today with System Center 2012, you can and get a lot of benefit from it. And when Windows Server 2012 comes along, integrate the Hyper-V element with that going forward. So finally, to wrap up, we've just got different approaches to what we define as cloud on your terms. VMware term it your cloud. We say cloud on your terms. Just different. With a vCloud and vCloud connector, you're just connecting VMware clouds, whether they're on a service provider or on your own infrastructure. But with Microsoft, building the private clouds using System Center, whether it's got VMware tools in there, whether it's got Citrix or Microsoft, with System Center 2012 as that linchpin, but System Center 2012 connecting with public cloud services. So allowing you to cherry pick the right services for your business. So services like Office 365 or Azure. But remember that commonality between the four, between the systems, the identity, Active Directory, management through System Center, virtualization through Hyper-V, and development through Visual Studio and .NET and so on. So that common four pillars that apply to the Microsoft approach, enabling you to really build the cloud that's right for you. You may start on-premise, and you may move towards some public services, but that's entirely up to you going forward. But you can do it at your own pace with the right hardware, with the right set of software tools. And finally, I'll wrap up with the cost. The Microsoft solution is relatively simple to license, and it's probably not often you'll hear that. I chose a scenario, just a simple scenario, 500 VMs, 15-to-1 ratio, that's 34 hosts, excluding Windows Server licensing, because you'd need that on a VMware infrastructure, you'd need that on a Microsoft one. So I've kept that as a constant and just left that to one side. If you were going to license it, you'd need 68 CPUs of Windows Server data center for this example. And we're looking to get comprehensive management, because we need that for the private cloud. And with Microsoft, Hyper-V Server, it doesn't cost anything. Time to download it, maybe. And then System Center, based on retail pricing that's on the web, $122,000, which gives you all of those System Center tools for that 500 VM infrastructure. For application performance management, self-service, backup, application protection, service management, and so on. When it comes to VMware, even just the vSphere element, the first block that we need to build the cloud upon has already exceeded the cost of System Center. And there, the pricing, where I've got these from, they will come up on the bottom very shortly. vCenter, yeah, that's a linchpin, that's a small part to add on in terms of cost. You want the vCOPS solution. I can only get pricing for the Enterprise Edition, for the monitoring, for the management of the virtual machines, the application performance management, the application director to create those blueprints, and finally vCloud director to provide that self-service portal. Now, admittedly, you might not need 500 VMs worth of APM or AD, so you tune it accordingly. But even if you just focus it on a small subset of that infrastructure, vSphere, vCenter, vCloud director, it's 2-3 times more expensive than the Hyper-V solution, and it's not delivering as much capability. But the key thing is that you've got to take away is, as your cloud scales up with VMware, because everything's per VM licensed, vSphere and vCenter aside, so vCOPS, APM, they're per VM licensed. So as you aggressively scale up, you pay more. With Microsoft, because it's CPU licensed, you cover your CPUs, and as you scale up your business, your environment, you can scale it up at no more cost. So the cost per VM continues to drop. Now, obviously, you could say, well, actually, when you scale out your environment with Microsoft, you'll buy more System Center licenses for the processors you add. Absolutely. But you'll do that with vSphere as well. So you'll pay scaling out and you'll pay scaling up. With Microsoft, it's not like that. And we're delivering more value. So, to finish. New batteries for the clicker. I should just stand here and just click. So with Hyper-V and System Center, hopefully what you'll take away is the value in these technologies, these integrated tools, they're giving you an option to control your applications, build a private cloud for a mixture of technologies, it's not just about Microsoft, and build one that's set up for the future with things like Windows Server 2012, with System Center 2012. That it really is a powerful platform going forward to help you build the cloud that's right for you and connect it to the services that are important to your business. And that's at a lower cost and higher levels of integration and automation than the equivalent from VMware. And with that, I'll sign off. Thank you very much for your time. If you've got any questions, please come and see me.